Pastor, author, and Bible teacher Alan Wright.
What can happen to a religious person who can become so convinced that the outward signs of their faith are the thing that matters most, and on the inside there'd be no real substance to their relationship with God?
That's Pastor Alan Wright. Welcome to another message of good news that will help you see your life in a whole new light. I am Daniel Britt, excited for you to hear the teaching today in the series we call Oh Baloney, a study of Romans chapters 1 through 3, as presented at Renolda Church in North Carolina. Now, if you're not able to stay with us throughout the entire program, we sure want to make sure you know how to get our special resource right now. It can be yours for your donation this month to Alan Wright Ministries. So as you listen to today's message, go deeper as we send you today's special offer. And you can contact us at PastorAlan.org. That's PastorAlan.org. Or call 877-544-4860. That's 877-544-4860. More on that later in the program. But now let's get started with today's teaching. Here is Alan Wright.
Okay, beloved, are you ready for some good news?
Yes.
Everything that makes the gospel and makes the gospel such good news has to do with this, that our faith, our life with God, is something that's lived from the inside out. There are expressions of our faith that are on display, but it all has to do with the reality of an inward communing relationship with God Himself. And a world that so emphasizes the outward things and tends to lure us into living from the outside in, we have the good news of Romans chapter 2 that describes why real Christianity is exactly the opposite of that. God wants you not to have the appearance of a thing, but to have the thing itself, the reality. And that's what we're talking about today. Someone has written, if you can live without caffeine, if you can be cheerful, ignoring aches and pains, if you can resist complaining, if you can understand when your loved ones are too busy to give you any time, if you can take criticism and blame without resentment, if you can ignore a friend's limited education and never correct him or her, if you can resist treating a rich friend better than a poor friend, if you can face the world without lies and deceit, if you can conquer tension without medical help, if you can relax without liquor, if you can sleep without the aid of drugs, if you can honestly say deep in your heart that you hold no prejudice against anyone, congratulations. You have almost reached the same level of spiritual development as your dog. A little bit of tricky humor, because you're just going along going, yeah, that's what a great Christian looks like right there. What's missing in describing what could be an appearance of a great Christian is God Himself. God on the inside, a relationship with God. We have been watching, we're in the middle of watching a limited documentary series on Netflix on Bernie Madoff. I didn't know much about Madoff. There was a big scandal on Wall Street years ago, and it's fascinating. Bernie Madoff, who eventually stole billions and billions of dollars that people never got back. And it started with a legitimate business in which he was, I think in the 70s, selling over-the-counter stocks. He got into this a little bit and had some family and friends that he was investing in these risky stocks that didn't trade in the stock exchange itself. And for a while he was making them some money, and then it went south, these risky investments, and people, he lost their money. And as a young man, instead of going to these investors, friends and families, and saying, I made poor investments, it's been lost, and I'm sorry your money's gone, he went to his father-in-law and borrowed $30,000, which was enough in that day for him to cover these losses. And instead, he told his investors that they had made money and done well. And one historian of Madoff put it this way. So early on, Bernie Madoff made a decision that it was more tolerable for him to live with himself as a liar than it was to live with himself as a failure. And what happened was from that little seed of that $30,000 that enabled him to cover up all these bad investments, it seeded what would become the biggest Ponzi scheme in history, where eventually Bernie Madoff had in a fund $70 billion of folks' money, whole hedge funds invested in it, that had never bought a stock, never made a trade, and had no investment behind it whatsoever. All he would do is when someone said they wanted to get their investments back out, he would pull money out of the fund and give them that money. And he was always getting money, putting it in the fund while he and his colleagues in the scheme lived lavishly. They never bought any stocks. What's interesting was he had a legitimate business on the 19th floor of this Manhattan building. And then he had on the 17th floor this bogus Ponzi scheme. And it was just odd. Everything about it is stunning that it could ever happen, that it could fool that many smart business people and financiers and hedge fund managers, and twice fool the SEC itself. In one instance, they were so committed to this, what they would do is they had two computer guys that came up with a program wherein they could generate all of these phony stock transactions by looking and simply seeing what happened the day before in the stock market, and they would go back and recreate as though they had bought and then sold that stock, and it looked like they'd made money. And this is weird. Even after we had good printers and all that, they were using a dot matrix printer with those holes in it, you know, that fed through the thing. And there were nobody could get any online statements. They just send them, when they wanted a statement, they just send them these pieces of paper that had been printed on a dot matrix printer. And these brilliant people were just going along with it, because on paper he was showing that they were making twice as much money as everybody else in the stock market. It was too good to be true, and yet there's something about human greed that just wants to get it. And then what happened was one time the SEC sent in two junior associates to examine the books. And Bernie Madoff was so famous and so revered on Wall Street that the two young SEC associates were just starry-eyed to be in the same room with Bernie Madoff. And he showed him a bunch of things and he talked to him, and he could just, you know, be so convincing, and they gave him a clean bill of health. So now Madoff's going around saying, we got a clean bill of health from the SEC. And so even more people started investing with him. And it became so popular that he started turning some people down, which made him all the more attractive. People were desperate to try to get their money in with Bernie Madoff. Like, you're a special person if you got your investment. If you could get $1 billion with Bernie Madoff, you're really special. And if somebody ever said, I've got questions and I want to get it, he'd say, all right, I'm going to give you your money back. He said, but don't ever come back to me. And they're like, oh, no, we don't want to miss out on these great returns we're getting, you know. And there was none of the money was being invested in anything. It's unbelievable. I mean, there was one time where a major client wanted to get suspicious and wanted to see all the paperwork and was coming in. And so in a scramble on the 17th floor, he said, we got to generate a bunch of paperwork for this client who wants to come in and see where his $1 billion is went. And so they started spewing out all these numbers on their dot matrix printer. And they got all these sheets of paper, and they were going to go down, and Bernie was going to lay it in front of them and show them everything they've been doing. And somebody said, wait a minute, this paper looks too new and fresh, like nobody's even been looking at these numbers. So they actually took the papers and threw them on the ground and walked around on them so they'd look old. And then they stacked them back, and somebody said, this is still warm from the printer. And so they put it in the refrigerator and cooled it off and carried it down, tattered and cool. Like, man, they really have been working these numbers. And it convinced them. And this went on for decades. Decades of this, of people who thought they had stocks they didn't have and thought they were making money that they weren't making, until 2008, when everything crumbled. And once everybody wanted their money out, then there wasn't money to give. And it was all empty. Because early as a young man, he decided to be more tolerable to be a liar than to feel like a failure. That he would be more comfortable living a lie with only the exterior, external appearance of success than actual success. And that he could live like that, just from the outside in. But on the inside, it was bankrupt. I share that example because I think it goes far in a natural picture to explain what Paul is saying to his Jewish readers about what can happen to a religious person who can become so convinced that the outward signs of their faith are the thing that matters most, and on the inside there'd be no real substance to their relationship with God.
That's Alan Wright, and we'll have more teaching in a moment from today's important series.
Seeing as Jesus sees. It's the title of Pastor Alan Wright's newest book, just released, and it's the giant secret of real transformation. Followers of Christ tend to focus on doing, so we've been told to ask, what would Jesus do? But even our noblest efforts to be more like Jesus ultimately fail for the same reason that pledging to keep the law never works. There's no gospel power in our self-striving. But what if the secret to personal transformation and victorious living isn't found in doing as much as in seeing? Anyone who has ever had an aha moment or has suddenly discovered the truth of a situation knows that fresh vision changes everything. In his eye-opening new book, Alan Wright invites readers into a new, simple spiritual practice, a little breath prayer that can be prayed throughout the day. Jesus, how do you see this? It's a prayer that the Savior loves to answer because, after all, Christ came to be the light of the world. Clear away confusion, win over the darkness, and open your heart to wonder and joy by getting your copy of the book right away. When you make a gift to Alan Wright Ministries today, we'll send you Pastor Alan's new beautiful hardcover book. And as an additional thank you for your support, you'll also receive a free 6-week Seeing as Jesus Sees companion video series from Pastor Alan, along with a study guide and a daily reading plan. Let Jesus take you by the hand and show you a whole new perspective for your life. As you learn how to ask Christ for his eyes, you'll start seeing as Jesus sees. And you're going to love the view. The gospel is shared when you give to Alan Wright Ministries. This broadcast is only possible because of listener financial support. When you give today, we will send you today's special offer. We are happy to send this to you as our thanks from Alan Wright Ministries. Call us at 877-544-4860. That's 877-544-4860. Or come to our website, pastoralan.org.
Today's teaching now continues. Here once again is Alan Wright.
And I want to go through the sections of this dense text and show you what I think it means, what he's saying. And then there's some splendid good news to draw from this that leaves us profoundly encouraged and I hope puts your heart more in love with the Son of God. Look back at verse 17 again. If you call yourself a Jew and rely on the law and boast in God and know his will and approve what's excellent, he's listing all of these benefits of being amongst the Jewish people. You've got the name, you've got the law, you've got the revelation of God, you've got right from wrong. He goes on to say at verse 19, you're a guide to the blind, a light to those in the darkness. You're probably familiar with a number of Old Testament texts to say of the Jewish people, you'd be a light to the nations. And he's listing that. An instructor, verse 20, instructor of the foolish, teacher of children. The whole Jewish people, they were just fantastically committed to passing on their teaching to their children, having in the law the embodiment of knowledge and truth. So this whole list, at first as you read it, you might go, well, he's being sarcastic. That what he's saying to his Jewish readers is, oh, you think you've got all these things, but you don't really. That's not what he's saying. He's saying these are good things, and this is part of the benefit of you having been born into a Jewish family, and that God had given through this one people, okay, he had given a revelation that started with the old covenant and started with the law, and all that's really good. You call yourself a Jew? Well, that's beautiful. It's beautiful. It comes from the name Judah, who is one of the sons of Jacob, and it means of praise to the Lord, praise the Lord. You have the law, you have the Torah. Wonderful, is that? You know, the thing is so, amazing, just at the most rudimentary level about a lot of the Old Testament truths is that it just actually had practical impact on the people of God. like ceremonial hand washing at all these different times before you'd eat food and all of that. Nobody knew what a germ was until a few centuries ago. And yet here are the Jewish people, everybody made fun of them for washing their hands all the time. They're avoiding plagues. And, you know, in war, more people throughout history, I think, have died from diseases than they have from the sword. So the Jewish people are just being preserved by that. They were told they were supposed to quarantine before quarantining was a thing. And so infectious diseases of the skin and others, people would be quarantined until it was healed, so others didn't catch, on and on like this. But not just that, the more weighty matters of what makes for life, like loving God and loving others, like the secret to fulfillment and happiness is not through selfishness, but through selflessness. These giant things about justice and love and covenantal commitment, all of this, you know, the people had that. So Paul is listening and saying, so if you have all of that, you know, listing one blessing after the other, he says, well, that's wonderful if you call yourself that. And if you have those things, then yeah, that's great to be thankful for. But if those things, your name, you're Jewish, you have the Bible, you've got the outward sign of circumcision, is a sign of the covenant. If you think that your security and your life is in those outward things, you're missing the whole thing. That's what he's saying. They're good things, but you're missing the whole thing if you place your security, your hope in those things, the outside things, the external things. Verse 21, he continues, you then who teach others, do you not teach yourself? Why you preach against stealing, do you steal? You who say that one must not commit adultery, do you commit adultery? You who abhor idols, do you rob temples? You who boast in the law, dishonor God by breaking the law. I have read this over and over, and I've read every interpreter of these couple verses that I could find because I found them so intriguing. I want to know, what does this mean? Because I found it odd that if Paul is trying to make the point to his Jewish readers that you've all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, why does he pick up such heinous sins that a lot of his readers would not have committed? Like stealing, outright stealing, or adultery, or robbing temples? There was actually some different ideas of what this might mean, but there's at least one instance of a Jewish leader that actually robbed a pagan temple, took the idol, worshiped the idol. But why pick out these three things that a lot of his Jewish readers who are trying to live righteous lives would never have done those things, right? And some would say, well, this is kind of like when Jesus spoke in the Sermon on the Mount about a higher righteousness. You know, when he said, thou shalt not commit adultery, but I say to you, if you've even lusted, you've committed adultery. So there's a chance maybe he's kind of talking about that higher righteousness. Like you hadn't gone into a temple, stolen an idol, and put it on your shelf, but you've had idols of the heart. He might mean that. But I actually think he means something else. I think what he's saying is, to his Jewish readers, you who have the law, the Jewish name, and you have circumcision, do you know anyone who has those, all of those signs of being one of God's people, who's done any of these things, stealing or idolatry or adultery? And any reader would say, yeah. And I mean, there are people who call themselves Jewish and they've done those things. And I think Paul's saying, aha, I proved my point. The point being that if you know someone who has the Jewish name, has the law on their side, has the rite of circumcision, they've been faithful, all that, and yet they've done these very things, would you say that it's just fine and they're true Jew even though they do all these things? And they go, yeah, if somebody's out there stealing and murdering and committing adultery, yeah, I see your point. That something's wrong there. So he's saying, aha, every single one of us has fallen short of the glory of God. He's exposing the superficiality and unreliability of relying on outward things. Verse 24, for as it's written, the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles because of you. Now, he is talking here about hypocrisy, but maybe not in the way that we usually think. And this is a real important verse, and so I want to come back to it more with some of our grand conclusions of good news from this text. We're going to come back to that. Verse 25, for circumcision indeed is of value if you obey the law, but if you break the law, your circumcision becomes uncircumcision. Circumcision was, simply put, a sign of the old covenant. It's a symbol you are part of Old Covenant, that you have your baby boy circumcised on the eighth day. Abraham was called by God, blessed of God, and then later went through circumcision. So this became a remarkably important symbol for the Jewish people. And so much so that in many circles, the symbol became an important thing unto itself because it contrasted them with other peoples. You might think of this in just the parallel for Christians of baptism. So we're going to have a baptism today, and we're going to celebrate, and the baptism is great. It's just wonderful. When you go under the water, you come up out of that water, it's a beautiful symbol of, like, as if you've once were dead and now you're alive again. It is a symbol of washing. It is a symbol of entry into the family of God. The people always pass through the waters like the Red Sea or the Jordan River. It's all of that and more. And should we get baptized? Yeah, we should get baptized because Jesus said we should be baptized. And is baptism a wonderful symbol that expresses an inward reality of what's happened to us and therefore is part of our witness that we should celebrate? Yes, right. But is baptism the thing that makes a person a Christian? Of course not. Do you have to be baptized in order to be saved and go to heaven? Of course not.
Alan Wright, our good news message, Inside Out, from the series, O Baloney, from Romans 1 through 3, an in-depth study. Please stay with us. Pastor Alan is back, joining me in the studio, sharing his parting good news thought for the day for us all in just a moment.
Seeing as Jesus sees. It's the title of Pastor Alan Wright's newest book, just released, and it's the giant secret of real transformation. Followers of Christ tend to focus on doing, so we've been told to ask, what would Jesus do? But even our noblest efforts to be more like Jesus ultimately fail for the same reason that pledging to keep the law never works. There's no gospel power in our self-striving. But what if the secret to personal transformation and victorious living isn't found in doing as much as in seeing? Anyone who has ever had an aha moment or has suddenly discovered the truth of a situation knows that fresh vision changes everything. In his eye-opening new book, Alan Wright invites readers into a new, simple spiritual practice, a little breath prayer that can be prayed throughout the day. Jesus, how do you see this? It's a prayer that the Savior loves to answer because, after all, Christ came to be the light of the world. Clear away confusion, win over the darkness, and open your heart to wonder and joy by getting your copy of the book right away. When you make a gift to Alan Wright Ministries today, we'll send you Pastor Alan's new beautiful hardcover book. And as an additional thank you for your support, you'll also receive a free 6-week Seeing as Jesus Sees companion video series from Pastor Alan, along with a study guide and a daily reading plan. Let Jesus take you by the hand and show you a whole new perspective for your life. As you learn how to ask Christ for his eyes, you'll start seeing as Jesus sees. And you're going to love the view. The gospel is shared when you give to Alan Wright Ministries. This broadcast is only possible because of listener financial support. When you give today, we will send you today's special offer. We are happy to send this to you as our thanks from Alan Wright Ministries. Call us at 877-544-4860. That's 877-544-4860. Or come to our website, pastoralan.org.
Back here in the studio to share Pastor Alan's parting good news thought for the day, where we're placing a bookmark in this teaching. We'll pick up next time, Inside Out.
Well, I guess we can say that, you know, the whole power of the Christian gospel, it's an inside job. Yeah. And religion wants to go from the outside in. Religion, dead religion, is all about outward conformity to external advice, principles, or laws. And we're learning from Paul, and as his argument continues to grow in its strength and clarity in Romans, that not so with the gospel of Jesus. The gospel of Jesus Christ is something that happens from the inside out, and it's all the difference in the world.
Thanks for listening today. Visit us online at pastoralan.org or call 877-544-4860. That's 877-544-4860. If you only caught part of today's teaching, not only can you listen again online, but also get a daily email devotional that matches today's teaching delivered right to your email inbox free. Find out more about these and other resources at pastoralan.org. That's PastorAllen.org. Today's Good News message is a listener-supported production of Allen Wright Ministries.